There's absolutely nothing mechanically wrong with this thing that stopped yesterday. Nothing. It stopped in the seventh talk. And it refused to work through the seventh talk. But it's working on the eighth. We caught the seventh talk, by the way. I think it was a reminder to us. Seriously, I believe it was. A reminder of the importance of silence on certain areas of our work. The more the idea of your soul transmuting Christ energy and substance into form becomes apparent to you, the more you realize the difficult task that faced the prophets and seers who had to leave a written record of truth that would survive the centuries and still keep within itself, intact, underneath all the historical episodes, that pure radium which shines through the ages, which still maintains an internal integrity and can forever be followed with total faith and trust in divine love and divine wisdom. Those nuggets of truth are interlaced throughout the seemingly simple words of the Bible, holding for us an invisible path of light and inspiration. It should be easier to see, too, that, well, take this case of many of us who, in our humanhood, may have been trained by our parents to think that we were really something very special, meaning a very special human being. And as we grew up loved by our parents a certain way, we sort of walked through the rest of the world with our head held high, maybe looking down a little bit and saying, I'm special. I feel even that God has looked upon me a special way. I've been singled out. In a way, it's a good feeling. But everybody has been singled out. And then when it comes time to lay down our life, our special qualities, we say, well, wait a minute, I'm special. I've got to hold on to this. And we find that this business of being a very special personality, specially endowed by God, specially cared for by God, and all of that, finally acts as a preventive so that we feel, I can't lay down this beautiful creature that I am. I've had all the signs of how important I am. And that becomes the deterrent to laying down our life that we may pick it up again. But now look at it on a larger scale. The soul is very smart. It's one with God. It has all of the qualities of God. And as the individualization of God pours through the soul must say to itself, think how important I am. I own the cosmos. I can change rain into shine. I can turn the floods. I can tell the stars to stand still. I control this whole world. And then God has to come along to the soul and say, little man, We're going to have to send you on a little journey because you're a little too big for your britches. And this is precisely what happens. The soul is sent into a strange place called the outer world. And now it's going to learn that it of itself can do nothing. And it becomes the prodigal. It wanders out into a world and it sees at first hand these little human minds who are very smart and who make this a real beautiful bloody world. And it says, my God, I can't be that way. And it understands the divine wisdom that sends each soul out to learn it firsthand, the futility, the utter futility of trying to run the universe yourself. And all of our little individuals who were so specially chosen are a duplicate copy of that soul in transit learning for itself that its only way home is to surrender its life unto God and let the Father bring it home. And so you can now see this earth experience, this entire human world experience, as a training for your soul, in which it sees the chaos of individual thought. It sees the chaos of one person separate from another. It learns from the visible experience of the world that it must be in synchronization with its own source at all times in order to even survive. And somewhere in this, it passes this information along to that which is going to become an extension of the soul into this world called your mind. It is going to wed your mind with your soul so that your mind can be wedded with the Spirit and the Christ. The training of your soul is your human experience. And all of the forms walking about, running about, speaking, hearing, listening, acting, these are the visible symbols that the soul reads to learn its lessons. I don't mean this as a symbolism. I mean it as a fact. When Shakespeare said all the world's a stage, he was saying the same thing. We are merely the players. We are the animated concepts through which the soul learns. It learns from the tree. It learns from the flood. It learns from everything in the visible world. And most what it learns is what not to do. Because you can learn a lot of that in this world. By knowing what not to do, it knows what to do. The philosopher Maimonides was often referred to by Joel and in the introduction or in one of the classes that ended up in Beyond Words and Thought. Joel referred to Maimonides and said that he, Maimonides, had said that God is incorporeal. And that brief statement was very important to Joel because he then went on from there to say something I want to read to you. He said that Maimonides, in addition to saying that God is incorporeal, said that God has no visible shape whatsoever. God is incorporeal. Now, that would seem to be a very unimportant phrase in some ways. All right, we say that God has no visible shape and God is incorporeal. What about us? And this is what about us, according to Joel. Metaphysicians recognize the incorporeality of God, but they do not recognize the incorporeality of man. They are setting up a barrier between God and man, because incorporeal God cannot give birth to corporeal man. Translation: incorporeal God could not create the corporeal human race. A very explosive statement, buried there, but said with that intention. And so from Maimonides' simple statement that God is incorporeal, Joel points out that man must also be incorporeal, and therefore corporeal man cannot be God's creation. All of this by way of bringing us to the fact that if we continue as corporeal man, we remain as that which is not in the kingdom of God and has no opportunity to live in it. And therefore, be transformed. You see the sequence there. Incorporeal man has no physical structure. Those on the mystical path must remove from thought the image man. He puts that in quotes, the image man. Maybe I put it in quotes, but it's in quotes here. Must remove from thought the image man. The corporeal man, the man who has physicality, because that man is not the man of God's creation. The union of God and man can never take place between incorporeal God and corporeal man. So we have these books called Conscious Union with God, and if corporeal man reads them and doesn't get the message and stays as corporeal man, conscious union with God is therefore impossible, and that is stated by Joel. Only in your incorporeality are you at union with God. So we're cutting a bridge out from behind us and from under us. I had a few handshakes yesterday that were not very firm. I don't quite know if I'm ready to make that commitment. Fine. I think that's a wise decision. And it's important that at this particular point, a person know that when you do not make the decision to be the incorporeal self, your conscious union with God has just been decided as something you will not experience until you do. You should know it at least, even though you feel unable to make the commitment. I think in that, this class is doing a service to those who feel, I cannot go that far, because we are telling them straight out, there's no point even coming to the next class if you don't intend to go that far, because that's what it's all about. And I hate to see people raise their hopes have them raised as if an implied promise had been made, and all the while that which they are truly seeking is denied them because they do not know specifically where they stand. So we have divided ourselves into those who are pursuing the conscious awareness of incorporeality as best they can, and those who feel it's too much of a commitment. And I wanted that division. I wanted it clear. That's why I wanted the handshakes. We don't love you less, maybe even more, because you need more love. If you have not yet reached the point where you feel without making the commitment, you're not entering life. I recall when I could not have made such a commitment. It would have been unthinkable. And the only reason one can't make such a commitment is because there has to be an inner activity that is undeniable that says to you, I am moving forward, and if you don't, I'll move without you. This inner activity says it. And when that happens, of course, you go with it. And if it doesn't happen, then it would only be a mental decision which would somewhere break down anyway. So, believe me, I don't feel that when a person says, I'm not ready to make a commitment, that they're any different than we all are at one period. And so it's not a thing that wins criticism of any nature. It's just a statement of fact as things are. And one day, something inside becomes alive, and then you know where you must go. So in a sense, it's good to know 10 years in advance. And in another sense, it's good to know that there are those who are walking the path with you in that commitment. I'm quite sure that in Joel's travels, he could also feel, perhaps without the handshake, who and who was not moving into this total commitment. I have recognized my incorporeal self, says Joel. I have recognized my incorporeality. I am not in a body. I am speaking through a body. But I, infinite spiritual Christ, and I'm interpolating those words, I, infinite spiritual Christ, I am not in the body. I and my Father are one, not two. Wherever God is, I am. I think all of us should find that in page 141 of Beyond Words and Thoughts. Sit with it and measure yourself against it until the day when you can say with as much conviction and certainty and effortlessness just what Joel found himself able to say. But remember, before Joel could say this, he moved the identical path that we are moving in. He had somewhere to lay down his life to pick it up again. He had somewhere to give up that sense of corporeality to whatever extent he could. And remember, too, that this inner awareness, just stated by him here, was necessary before transition could be made. Until you find your incorporeal self and know that you are it, and that you are not in your body of physicality, the word transition is just a dream. This may not be absolutely following that point, but I think some of you might like to hear it. In one of my deeper meditations, when I was in full awareness of my incorporeality, I saw that I could incarnate as a male or a female. That is because I, God, is neither male nor female. It made me wonder about the previous incarnations or corporeal appearances of Jesus. How many of them were female? We never hear about that. I have no answers on it either, but obviously if Joel could have in previous appearances been male or female, so could Jesus. The point he's making is that neither male nor female is the reality. They are both necessary appearances in this world to train the soul. I want to go to No End, because certain things in No End are more meaningful now that we have talked about that great transmutation in which the soul converts Christ energy into divine flesh. This is Jesus saying, "Marvel not that I say ye must be reborn." He could have said it that way, that let your soul convert your Christ energy into divine flesh. But it was for us to discover through our study just what was meant. And even then, who can do it? The Father doeth the works. We merely submit. We surrender. We lay down our life to pick it up, and that now assumes a new meaning. I can recall when I first read that, I wondered, how could I lay it down to pick it up? And if I shot myself in order to comply, how could I pick anything up? I wouldn't be there to pick it up. And that was way back. And it just becomes so clear when you know that the laying down is laying down the sense of corporeality, that your incorporeal self may be woven out of the Christ identity that your soul converts into living food. So when you give up corporeal sense, dying daily to it, your soul goes to work with renewed energy and inspiration, weaving the garment of immortality. Now we're in the No End chapter, which I purposely did not complete last time, or which I was not permitted to complete is more accurate. Page 63. Everyone who has ever lived from the beginning of time is still alive. He's speaking of the reality the incorporeal self, which is always alive and always present. The dehypnotized consciousness does not see disease as disease or sin as sin. It separates them from the person. And you can see the dehypnotized consciousness separating that which appears in the corporeal image from the incorporeal reality that is there. Something that becomes a little easier to understand when you are conscious of incorporeality and corporeality. The dehypnotized consciousness separates sin and disease from the person and realizes that these are false appearances produced by the belief in a selfhood apart from God. The corporeal self is a selfhood apart from God. And when you know you have an incorporeal self, you're not too unhappy about giving up the corporeal self. And the more real the incorporeal self becomes, the less real the corporeal self becomes. Just like the child that outgrows its toys, but on a larger scale. The belief in a selfhood apart from God is where we find these sins and diseases. Now, the corporeal self that we believe in, without having known it as a selfhood apart from God, then became the battleground where we try to fight out all of our life's problems. It's as if the tablecloth on a table had some stains, and you thought, for some strange reason, that there was something wrong with the table. Not realizing all you had to do was tear off the tablecloth, and there's a perfectly good table, put on a new tablecloth. So with this corporeal sense, it's a sort of a tablecloth over the table. It's just a surface, a mental surface. And when we step out of it, we're there in the original, in the substance, where the onion skin peeled away, called corporeality. And through meditation and truth and experience, this does become just an outer shell, useful for its purpose for the time it is required. And you can begin walking more confidently in the fact that you are not contained within it. You wear it like a shawl. We are becoming more consciously incorporeal beings. And that is a quiet, invisible activity of the soul, enabling you to comprehend, or the word Joe would like so much, discern who you really are. A day that is not spent in conscious awareness of your own incorporeal self is a wasted day. And I have found that whoever enters into corporeality during the day and does not at times pause to remind themselves of the incorporeal reality of their being is lured into many unprofitable directions, some of which it takes 20 years to get out of. It should be daily practice. And I know if you added up all the things you're told should be daily practice, you wouldn't have enough hours in the day. But there are many days. And if you put them all together, they become a cohesive little ball. And you find that 83 of the suggestions all come down to different facets of one suggestion. Each day, live outside the sense of form, at least a part of the day. You know, it only takes 3 seconds to wind a watch, and then it goes for the rest of the day. You sort of wind yourself when you get out of corporeal sense. You find the rest of the day is so different. You're under divine law. Human law doesn't hit you. It bounces off you. It can't even find you. You are in corporeal. So wind that watch every now and then during the day. And it'll tick without you having to look back at it. This universal belief in a selfhood apart from God is so universal, so powerful, that it operates in our consciousness until we detect it and cast it out by knowing the truth. And so, I know that for 20 years people have read Don't Live in a Selfhood Apart from God, and they haven't been able to connect the idea that the corporeality of their consciousness is the selfhood apart from God. And when you step out of corporeal sense into a conscious awareness of incorporeal reality, they have stepped out of that selfhood apart from God. And then we know the truth. That has another meaning again. You shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. But the truth is that Christ, your now incorporeal divinity, contains all that God is. And that when you know this Christ and live from that center, there is a transmutation taking place in which the soul is leaving a spiritual body that will replace the visible physical body. If you know this, you are knowing the truth, and the truth will make you free. Once knowing the truth, we find that knowing has degrees of knowing, so that there is a place where you say, I know, without really knowing. Then there is a place where you say, oh, this is what I should have known, not that. But the real knowing is when you know that Christ I am, then you know. And in a sense, you don't know Christ I am until Christ I am announces within you Christ I am. Because even human mind saying Christ I am or believing it doesn't know. When Christ announces itself within you, you know. And that announcement comes in a variety of ways, all individualized to your specific need, your specific type of recognition.
There were more than 10 people who came to this class as persons, who were no longer persons. And there were some who found that their inner experiences and things we discussed yesterday were things that only had come through them, which they had seen, put in a catalog, or alphabetized in their mind in some way. And then through the class yesterday, hearing certain things in the visible, audible world, they matched them up with their own experiences and found that they were deeper in the path than they ever dared to believe, that they were already in the transmutation process. But he never defined it before. In a sense, that's what the Bible is for. It's to confirm to you what you're going through. And so this was the right class for those individuals. And we were matched to meet here. And Spirit did this without you and I making a conscious decision. You could have been in Alaska, Texas, Iowa, Massachusetts, Hawaii, and we were one at the time, unaware of each other, and then here we are. What did it? The one incorporeal Christ body, revealing itself as the forms that we walk in, all responding to the one soul. To me, that's the sign of grace that is always so reassuring to that little human mind that may want to come up and take over. What human mind could do it? And as Joel said, I have taken this message around the world 25 years. He was saying, could this man do it? Something that took this message around the world is the message. The message took itself around the world, appearing as Joel. Now this magic is in all of us. Because that same Christ that walks around the world delivering his message through such revelators as Joel is saying, do you not know me? Have I been with you so long and you do not know me? If you know the truth that I in the midst of you am that same Christ who walks his teachings, that truth will make you free. And I think we've come to a place where we can believe that so well that we're no longer mystified by the incredibility of it. It's a simple fact. It's the miracle of God's being all present, all knowing, all powerful. And those qualities are the qualities of the I that you are. And so if you're untrue to those qualities, you're hypnotized. Wherever you are, I am. I am the only power, because I am the only life. Now, if you bow to a physical, visible power, you're walking away from yourself. And so you look at the power and say, wait a minute,
I don't have to accept that. I, in the midst of me, myself, my center, my being, my life, is all that's here. And suddenly the power isn't there. It never was there. It's still testing forever until you are Christ without opposite, without even a whisper of human thought, until there is not even a shadow of thought. Yourself is the power, and the more you know it, every false power meets the consciousness which, without power, dismisses. All that is not itself. The power of your being is in Alaska now. The power of your being is everywhere now. The all-knowing of your mind is everywhere now. Because you are the all-presence. And this must be revisited in consciousness frequently to become aware. It's as if you had arms and legs and didn't use them. And something were attacking you and you put your arms behind your back. And you didn't hold up a hand to block the sun from shining in your eye. Or to block the wind from blowing your face. You have it, and so you use it. But you have the Christ, and you must use the Christ. Let the Christ use you. You must become actively conscious of it. Not let it lie dormant as something you know and you believe, but let it live as your consciousness. Let it face all that comes, all that threatens, all that attacks, all that disturbs, until in agreeing with your adversary, in knowing the truth of being, the unreality of that which threatens is suddenly seen. And it falls away, for it has no body, no substance. Your omnipotence is not personal. It is the omnipotence of Christ. And in the world of effect, there will always be challenges of that omnipotence. Expect them. And know that they are still the forces that are training your soul. So that as you begin depending on the inner Christ more and more, so your soul is learning that it of itself is nothing. It must be a total transparency only for the full power of God. Your soul now is reaching a stage where it will soon return to the fifth world to become still more purified. That it may prepare for the birth of Christ within itself on a more infinite scale than we are capable of in the mortal sense of life. Never think that when you are suddenly Christed, that you've attained the fullness of your spiritual maturity. You're still in the fourth world moving up. And these are just the beginnings of wonders. Incorporeality is graduation day. But that's all it is. You're moving then out into a higher world. Where you can live in that incorporeality and learn more of the mysteries of your own being.